That's composer and trombonist Jonas Gwangwa, one of the pioneers of jazz in South Africa, with Shebeen Queen. It's from his 1990 album, Cry Freedom. For 10 years, from 1980 to 1990, Gwangwa led Amandla, the cultural ensemble of the African National Congress. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we continue our discussion, except we have some interesting developments today in the nomination process and in the confirmation process, I should say. We'll be talking about that, and we'll be talking about what you anticipate from, I should say, not from, what you anticipate of Donald Trump as president, and of the U.S. administration that he will be ushering in tomorrow, being his inaugural day. And beyond that, we're going to be talking about things we feel, we're talking about what we anticipate, but most importantly, we're talking about how ready we are for this administration, if in fact we are ready for it. So the number to call, announce it up front, of course, is 888-874-4888. It's just tomorrow. It's the day before the big inauguration. Lots and lots of protests are planned, including the day after and beyond. Different groups bringing the energies toward making sure that the interests of their particular sector are noted, and of course they also will be serving notice with their protests that they intend to be an oppositional force to the Trump administration. You also have a few demonstrations that will be pro-Trump, but the vast majority of them will be anti-Trump, and we'll see how that works out. But look, let's be focused in what we're talking about. This happens practically with every inauguration. You'd have people who are pro, people who are anti, and that has become quite the norm. But even though that is going to be occurring this time around as well, this is not a normal inauguration by any means. This is a very unusual inauguration, and for many reasons. And I want to raise today, if you can find a way to include it in your comments, whether you believe Donald Trump also, I mean, apart from what you think of him personally, do you see in any respect that Donald Trump is also a target by his party and by the intelligence community? I mean, there's a big story going on here. We'll be talking about it after the inauguration when we see who exactly will comprise his cabinet, and we'll get into that after that point. But just to plant in your head that there's a possibility that we're missing a very important angle to this whole story, and that is that in many ways, Trump also is in a bit of a pickle. The opposition also includes people within the Republican Party who still can't stand him, who still don't approve of him. And we have the ongoing war. It's kind of quiet so far. It hasn't been so blatant involving the security world of national security interests. So he's going to be fighting on a number of fronts, and I don't think that he expected that this would be developing, but it's going to be part of the scenery as we proceed into the new administration. 888-874-4888. Let's get your thoughts and we continue this discussion. Jay from New York, you get us started today.
Yes, good afternoon, Yatrice. Good to hear your voice again.
Great, you sound great too. Very clear on the phone.
Thank you. I don't expect anything at all from Donald Trump that hasn't happened with Barack Obama in regards to the black community. I just basically think that he's inept in the job. He doesn't know what he's doing. And a lot of things that he's going to do is going to be under the direction of other people. I think that basically he's going to try and do some things that may happen and may not happen.
It all what depends gives, on what brings you to this conclusion?
We just got finished with 8 years of Barack Obama. In the 8 years of Barack Obama, nothing really tragic happened, and I think people felt the same way about him that they feel about Donald Trump when he basically came into office, other than Obama's a little more knowledgeable on policy and procedures that deal with the government. But you remember when Obama came into office, a lot of people felt that he wasn't going to be a good president, that he wasn't going to do this and he wasn't going to do that. I mean, I think the one thing that we should be concerned about as a nation is the blatant corruption that may go on, the type of inside dealings and the type of giveaways and the type of cutting of social services that, in all honesty, isn't going to devastate the black community more than it will the white community. In all truthfulness, white people are more in line in this country to be hurt than people of color based on their population. And the sad thing is that, you know, I think we start to realize it when you hear those individuals talk about Obamacare and the Affordable, you know, Care Act. You know what I mean? They don't know that they're both the same. And when you point that out to them, it just baffles them. You know what I mean? So I think they're the ones that are in more danger. I mean, the thing that just really upset me the most recently is the fact that Obama has not even pardoned one political prisoner. I mean, I would have been happy if he would have pardoned Kwame Kilpatrick, you know, or even Blagojevich,
He did. He did pardon Oscar Lopez Rivera of the FALN.
Okay, but he had already been pardoned by Bill Clinton. And I'm grateful that he did pardon Oscar. But the bottom line is, we have so many that are still in jail for over 30 and 40 years that are responsible for him being in office. If it wasn't for those brothers and sisters, he would never have been able to ascend to the position that he has in this country. They were the ones who laid the groundwork for these so-called Negro peons to have position in this country, you treats. It was their fight. It was their fight that allowed for these individuals who enjoy the so-called greatness of this country at the expense of other people of color to be in this position.
Let me return to something you said just not too long ago. You talked about in contrasting Trump and Obama. You talked about the fact that one came out of a political world, that is Obama, and Trump came out of a whole different world having nothing to do with politics. You really believe that?
In a sense, the way it is portrayed, but I would say based on what he did with the whole Bursa movement and the way he acted over the 8 years that Obama has been in office and how he was able to ascend to the presidency. No, I think in a sense there was some kind of organization behind him. I think it's not as prevalent as it was when Obama was, became the president. But I think there was a lot of at play with powerful people that allowed him to get to this position. And
trust
you know,
me, trust
the thing
me,
is,
no wealthy person in the United States gets to be wealthy and apolitical. They clearly have some kind of political involvement.
He has to pay them back now. That's the thing. See, that's where the corruption, I think, is going to happen in this country in the next couple of years, is he has to pay those individuals back. And they're a lot more unseen than the ones that Barack Obama had to pay back, and Clinton and the rest of them, and Bush had to pay back in their time. These are people who, if you really think about it, you know, we don't know who they are. You know, with Obama, we had an idea on who these people are. With
we still
Trump,
don't know
I don't
who
think
they
we
are.
Have any idea. Right. That's what I'm
we
saying.
Still don't
you know,
know
what I mean? Now it's just going to be absolute a free fall. You know what I mean? But I'll leave with this. I'm more concerned about what's going to happen to elderly people. I'm more concerned what's going to happen to the disadvantaged. I'm deeply concerned about what's going to happen with education, because this woman, DeVos, or DeVoe, or whatever her name is,
DeVos,
is an utter disaster. She's worse than Ernie Duncan. And we know how bad Ernie Duncan was. This woman here has no business whatsoever being in the position that she's holding, just like Ben Carson and just like some of the others. That's the concern. That's going to be where you'll see how the hidden hands are manipulating and maneuvering this society. And you know something, Utrice? All we can do is continue to do the work, continue to bring forward, like you do every day, critical analysis, and hope for the best. Because remember, if they could survive 8 years of Obama, you know we could basically survive 2 to 3 years of Trump. Because believe me, he won't last 4 years. He doesn't have the temperament nor the intelligence to last.
Listen,
I'll say this to you. I'm a betting man, Utrice. That's how I make my income, betting. And I can honestly say I would put a bundle down that Trump will not last no more than 3 years. And I'd be more than happy to lose the money if he lasts the four. Because if he lasts more than four, you know it's some real, real madness going on in this planet. But you have a beautiful day. And God
thank
bless
you very much, Jay, for getting us started today and for sharing your thoughts. Thank you. Ali from New York, you're on the air. Professor Ali.
Now, you are the professor, and you know it. Even a gentleman that I called sometime this week called you. You are the professor. And you could decimate, you could oversee things before we do. But I do, I wanted to answer your question, how prepared are we? But before I answer that question, I wanted just to make a comment about a gentleman that called you early this week. I forgot what day. And he was talking about the fact that 98% of African-American black people voted for Obama. Do you remember that conversation?
Yes.
And maybe I didn't hear the whole conversation, which I'm pretty sure I didn't hear the whole conversation, but I don't understand his point, because people in this country, since especially African-American, since they got the right to vote, have been voting for white people forever. So
because that was all there was to vote for. There was nobody else to vote for. That was the result of a very long struggle. And
so
it has been the history of voting that people end up voting for whites. It was a white world.
And they're still voting for whites. Look at the Senate. Look at the House of Representatives. So I don't understand his point, really. I was actually a little bit confused about what he was trying to say on that day. But going back to your question, how prepared are we? Let me just tell you something about Monday. Monday, I belong to about three groups, but especially two groups I'm very active with. This is a small group that we meet on Friday. We made a Facebook page, and we organized us, I'm on ourselves, that we usually do, to go to Union Square to pay respect to Martin Luther King. So my group is, we are about a group of 10, no more than 11. But right now, almost 7 of us are actually attending the meeting. I just wanted to tell you, when I got there, we organized it to be there at 1 o'clock, to be there for an hour and a half. And how prepared and how organized are we? I just wanted to tell you that I was there for about 10 minutes for myself. I put my buttons on my hat that I had. I took out my sign. I was sitting on that plaza, and you know Union Square. Mm-hmm. I was sitting on that plaza all by myself, and my son said, yeah, like people will look at you, and they think that you're crazy. So then the other gentleman who came and joined me was there earlier, but he didn't see anybody because he got there early. So the two of us, these just two people, standing at Union Square, here reciting some more Martin Luther King writing, a white man, a Latino woman. We didn't have what you call a light-skinned Latino. So I'm not even dark. So we didn't have anyone dark there standing with us. Just the two of us. People looking at us like we were crazy. And apathy was the name of the game. People that even put their head down because they didn't even want to see us. The only reason that one gentleman with a girlfriend came over was because I asked him to, I called him and I said, can you please take a picture of us so that I could send it to the group? This is how well organized. Not even the people from my group came on that day because we had two actions. So they were going to the other action, which it was later. All of them were supposed to be there on that day. So this is how well organized. And I don't want to offend anyone. But, you know, I called you all the time, and I give you different events that will be happening that I will be there. Ask me how many people that call your station, and I don't want to offend anyone, that wanted to call up to listen to themselves, really had showed up to one of these events. None. So this is how well organized we are to fight what is coming to our way. This man, Price, who wants to cut Medicare and Medicare, is ready to be confirmed and do that. So this is how well organized. A white man, a Latino woman, is standing on that big plaza at Union Square on Martin Luther King Day, and people didn't even want to stop or even look at us. This is how well prepared and how well organized. And I shouldn't be calling this radio station today because today I'm going, for those people that live in New York, there is a group occupying Goldman Sachs in Wall Street. It's actually on the West Side Highway near where Whole Foods is right now, that they have been camping there since Tuesday at 3 and until tomorrow. So I'm going over there to support them, to give them a few hours of support. This is for those people that live in New York that they're listening to this program. And I say it again, this is how well prepared we are to fight the avalanche that is coming toward us.
Well, it's a somber, somber thought today that you serve notice. And this is part of the discussion. We have to be prepared and we have to be involved. And we can't wait for other people to do it. That's not other people's jobs. It's, you know, you're either prepared or you're not prepared yourself to, not only for yourself, but to contribute to the aggregate interests of the community. But like you said, if people are not interested now, perhaps they're waiting for the avalanche, as you said, to overwhelm them. Thanks, Ali, for your call.
Thank
from
you.
New Jersey, CC, you're on the air.
I am on now?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, Eutrice, thank
Hello.
You.
Are you speaking on speakerphone?
I had to. Off now, apologize for that. I was just actually putting on my headset. So here's what I want to say. Thank you for having one of the greatest shows on earth again.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
It's our program, you know. It's not just a one-sided thing. It's our program.
You say it's our program?
That's right.
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. I want to again say, as I usually need to take time to, and that is that you are appreciated, very appreciated, liked, and loved.
Thank you.
We have to, as I want to say also, I was a little rude a couple of times I was on last because I was a little off my game, so to speak. But I want to say that, again, you are the agent of change, and we are the change agents. So I want to say greetings to the change agents that are listening, those that are active and that are activated, and those that are thinking about it, and those that eventually will. And so, and we also must this year get ready to put some coins toward and some energy and some ideas toward increasing the lead stories audience. So I will be you know, contacting you this month. So we'll be working on that between now and Valentine's Day for sure.
Well,
so
thank
we
you.
Can do this. We can do this. So this is part of our activation. Now I want to answer the question. Are we prepared? Of course not. We're not prepared. And anyone that thinks we are or thinks that we should be or will be in real time, you know, hasn't thought it out really well. It just doesn't happen. It's not human nature. It's not the way we flow and the way we function and how we get it done. We get it done, you know, in the crisis or you know, while it's burning, you know, the buildings or the neighborhood, and then we start to really think about it because we've been armchairing it. We've been in a petrified state, a golf ball state, crystallized, and couch potatoes. So, and, you know, we will get it going because we're getting ready to experience enough pain, and that's what's going to take place. I want to come back to something that Gus, a few weeks ago, a caller, was focusing on, and that is we can quickly get prepared in our own way, and that is by each one reach one. Go out into the community. Look at your street. I'm looking out my storm door right now, and I'm looking at going 10 houses up, 10 houses down, 10 houses across, 10 houses in back, and just meet people and say, how do you feel? What do you think we should be doing? Should we come together and get people together and do our individual organizing? Take a page out of the Mormons that come and knock on your door or the Jehovah's Witnesses that knock on the door. Get the confidence, get the courage. If you're lacking that, go to a free Toastmasters workshop where you can learn a little bit about public speaking. It's not really a big deal. And so we can do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do it well. And it's going to happen. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's the greatest time in our lives because we're getting ready to get something done because it has to be done. And most people know it innately. To answer your question about, it was a very strong point, and I've had this point for a while because I'm going to remind you, Utrice, that I, as you know, work with numbers and or codes. And an interesting thing about the codes of Donald Trump is his key numbers are the number four, and he's bookended by the D's, which is the fourth letter. And so he can be stubborn, he can be obstinate, unyielding, and you know, hard-headed and so forth and so on. And you tell him to stand up, he sits down. That's why nobody can control or influence him. I get it. Not a problem. He's born on the 14th of June. His month, day, and year total, 40. So he's an interesting character by himself. But the point that you made about, is something going to happen? Well, the year he was the president-elect was 2016. That becomes 18, 2 and 16, 18, that's 9. The day that he was found to be president was the 9th of November. And he happens to be the 45th president, 4 plus 5 is 9. This number relates to endings. It relates to pruning and weeding. So to answer your question, he may not, I'm not going to say, you know, anything drastic, but it could be. But he is actually a puppet. He's actually there. The person they may want that I get on some intuitive level is Pence. So we've got to really rise to the occasion, and we can have fun doing it. I went to the original March on Washington, and I enjoyed myself going and coming on the Freedom Train and down there and so on in the process, and that opportunity has come back again. It's a cyclic rotation. So that's my piece. We're going to get ready, and we're going to get ready, and it's very simple. It's not complicated. There's some, Ralph Nader has a great book. There's some great manuals that people can almost treat like a book club, and we get our manuals and reread it, and we get organized, and we increase lead stories, listenership, and we begin to take on our community. It's each one, reach one. It's little by little. It's not a big, big, big deal at all.
All right. Well, that's some comfort to hear.
Yes.
Let's hope that people latch on to the idea, though, because we desperately need mass organization as a hedge against what's coming. And even beyond that, we need to have ourselves well organized. Thanks so much for your call. Great to hear
from
you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you. Keep up the great work.
Tricia, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, I'm UT's lead. My name's Patricia. I just kind of, I had this thought this morning about how I think the Republicans might have known that they might have won because they didn't want to vote on President Obama's Supreme Court nominee because they wanted to wait till the next election. So that thought came to my mind if they somehow knew they were going to win Trump. The Republican president.
What do you feel? Today is the eve of his inauguration. Does it cause any particular reaction in you?
Well, that's why I was thinking that this morning. Like, it just came, to my mind about maybe it is rigged or they knew it was rigged, so that's why they didn't want to vote for the president, Obama's nominee. I mean, I don't know if that has anything to do with what you're asking, but I was maybe thinking that because it is the eve of
It is clear then that Trump, among the things that he will have to take care of, is finding a U.S. Supreme Court nominee so that the nominee could be confirmed and be part of his administration.
For 9 months they could have voted for somebody, or 8 months, and they didn't, so they wanted to wait because they knew, like, I'm just wondering about all this Russian hacking or voter suppression could have it's already been planned that a Republican was going to be coming in. I mean, I don't know. They know after 8 years, they usually have it flips, from Democrat to Republican, unless, that's what, like, some people have, like, forecast who was going to win. So I was just,
it's a very complex system when you talk about politics at this level of politics, where you had so many dynamics here. You just can't extract one thing and think that it's not related to about 10 or 12 other things. And this is one of the characteristics of this particular election. You have people who themselves may be easy to read, but in the political context, there's so much stuff. There's so much baggage. There's a truckload of stuff that they bring to it that moves beyond, let's say, Trump is a businessman. Well, we know now that there are many facets to that. And as president, that will be a major factor in the tone of his administration, the focus of his administration, and, how it relates not just to Americans, but to the world. So it gets so complicated. The main thing is, you have to start somewhere to read the landscape. You got to read it somehow and figure out how are you likely to be affected by any particular area that particularly concerns you. Let's say you're an educator. You see what's happening. You see the appointment of someone who is dedicated to charter schools and to converting the school system into little pockets of evangelical activity. She's expecting.
Yeah, the far right and climate. I mean, they don't even believe in climate change, so they're going to just, like, do something about, you know, just they won't even believe in evolution. They'll just say, oh, well, it was all about Christ and forget, like, science. And
but that's what's coming. That's
the history point. Of, yeah.
What's on the table already is the shift from public schools to private and charter schools, especially charter schools. And you will have, we've been talking about charter schools for a long time. Dr. Pedroni from and Elena Errada from Detroit have been telling us what's been going on in Detroit. And Detroit is the test case for the national program for the evisceration of public school education. And this was begun under a Democratic president. So you see no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans with respect to education. So if you're an educator or a parent of a child in public school, you would want to get a reading of this landscape to figure out what's going to happen or to anticipate what's going to happen and to move proactively and get others involved, because inevitably there'll be a fight. There will have to be a fight about it.
Well, I think that's why I brought up about Republicans. They wouldn't vote for anything for Obama, so it was very easy for them just to not even vote for a Supreme Court nominee, because whatever he wanted to, they would just sit on it or do the debt ceiling or whatever, you know, they did to stop everything. Because, you know, Republican-controlled House, now they have a Senate-controlled and governors. And so I guess this is what, you know, it's been going on for a while.
This is what makes this time so special. And what makes this particular period of time so special is that we have a whole different approach to politics by the system. It's tweaked it. It's, in some cases, turned it all around because the Republicans have done a fantastic job of supplanting the Democrats at every level, at the state level, at the congressional level, and, of course, they claim the White House. So the policies are not just going to stay in Washington. This is a tidal wave of changes coming, and we better be ready for it. That's all I'm saying. We shouldn't be afraid. We should be vigilant, and we should be ready to react. Thanks so much for calling and sharing your thoughts
Thank
with
you.
Us today.
Have a nice day.
Thank you, and welcome.
Bye-bye.
888-874-4888, and Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Trice.
Hello.
It's E from Edgewater again.
Yes.
I'm just calling because I called on Tuesday and I was talking about the 95% of the black voters voted for Obama.
What Ali was earlier referring to.
I just wanted to clarify what I was trying to say. In my mind, I thought that if the Green Party had run a black candidate instead of Jill Stein, at least they might have gotten themselves on the political map instead of getting only 1% of the vote. If all the black people had voted for the black candidate, they would have maybe gotten 20 million votes, and then they might have gotten 20%. You know, that was my point. I thought it was a chance to see if my theory was right on that. You know, I wasn't saying anything against black people voting for a black candidate I mentioned Jewish, Jill Stein. I'm never against anybody. I want to clear that up. If Ali thinks that I'm some kind of have some hateful thoughts in my mind, that wasn't where I was coming from.
No, I don't think she thinks that. The question raised based on what you had offered on Tuesday, was whether this dynamic, the idea that black people would be voting for black candidates and why didn't they have a black candidate, the fact is that politics has changed a little bit since the 1950s and 60s. And that is, in another era, we saw that it was straight race, race-based voting. And in urban areas like New York City, like Chicago and elsewhere, you had a very interesting anomaly because these cities are cosmopolitan, more so than rural areas. They have a whole bunch of different people. But it's even so, it was still the case until very recently that people of color had no other person to vote for except a white person. That's it. That's a fairly recent change that is just beginning to move in a whole different direction. But you had nobody else to vote for. Everybody was white. And both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party maintained that racial status quo. Then gradually, in the urban areas particularly, they saw an opportunity, especially after the Civil Rights Movement, and the Civil Rights Movement in large measure concentrated on this question of voting. The Democratic Party saw an opportunity, even though they had to be forced, because we did have, for example, an attempt on the national level with Fannie Lou Hamer of Mississippi to seat the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and the Democrats just shut her down. So that's the dynamic that occurred in the South. In the North, we did see the admittance it's been a long time coming, but whites, quote unquote, were allowed in the political process. They weren't before. When I talked about whites, I mean particularly Jewish. Jews were admitted as a kind of concession. They weren't really in the political realm in great numbers at all. They were locked out. And we saw with the nomination and the support of blacks, the support of Latinos, that's how this whole thing started in the urban areas to have a tweak. But let me give you an example. In Brooklyn, a contiguous black community was always represented by a white person. I'm talking about the community that Shirley Chisholm eventually came from. That was, up until the time she ran for it, it was always, always represented by somebody white and invariably Jewish. And then there was a federal lawsuit that threatened to carve up, I mean, not a lawsuit, a gerrymandering effort to carve up this contiguous community. And they created 5 separate congressional districts out of the one that was there before. And all 5 were represented by Jews. And this was a landmark lawsuit that challenged this thing, which was an attempt, a very grave attempt, and it was happening all over the country, to smash the voting power, to weaken and dilute the voting strength of any community of color that would form a contiguous district that would naturally lead to the election of blacks and Latinos and other people. But that was not the way it was. And that was just a very recent change. And that was also a national program to keep these districts overwhelmingly white. In New York City, it happens that a lot of the representation came from Jews. They were the members of Congress representing largely Black and Latino communities. And that's how they got it. And that's how they maintained it. But that was the transition, and I'm saying this very clearly, from white, quote unquote, strictly white, to Jewish, who also was seen as white from the Black community standpoint. But from the white establishment, it was a concession. It's just like the City University of New York. It was not intended for people of color. It certainly wasn't intended for Jews. In fact, that's how City College was born. It was specific to the Jewish population coming into the City University system. And then Baruch College for the Jewish community, essentially. But these were concessions. This is race at its rawest, and by the Democratic Party. So I'm saying this to explain that the voting by Blacks for whites is not at all an anomaly in political history. They had no choice. There was nobody there, nobody else there that looked like them to vote for. That is a fairly recent development in political history.
I see. Yes, I see what you're saying, and you know, you straightened me out on what I thought on Tuesday. You gave me the same kind of information, and I was glad to hear about it. Because in my mind, I was trying to simplify things and just give some clout to the Green Party if they were smart. I mean, how did Jill Stein become the candidate anyway? There was no primary for the Green Party, right?
Well, I think they participated in the primary because they were on the ballot in several states. So they were able to participate in the primary. The thing, though, is with the Green Party, you see a very strong parallel here, where the Green Party's strength theoretically could be in widening its appeal specifically to communities of color. But it hasn't really done that. It hasn't achieved that. One of the constant criticisms that we got on this program was, you know, people saying, you know, we don't see the Green Party here in my community. And invariably, these would be people of color calling into the program. It was a constant criticism that the Green Party just did not make enough of an effort, not just in the election itself, but prior to the election in terms of organizing and appealing to a broad interest. I think they had that as a vision, that was part of their vision, to really involve communities of color, but it didn't come across that way. It wasn't seen that way by many, many, many people. So thanks. Great to hear from you.
So Jill Stein just became the candidate just because? I mean, there was no...
No, I think there was a sincere effort to run competitively.
I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the man that was the vice president candidate with Jill Stein. What was his name?
Oh, that's Ajamu Baraka.
All right. Now, if he was running for president and Jill Stein was the vice president candidate, we would have had a chance at least to have a black candidate running for president this time against white Trump and white Hillary. So that was my point, to give black people a chance to vote for a person that was black at least. Because that would be at least fair. But there isn't a Hispanic candidate either, so that's not fair either. But I think as for fairness, I mean, suppose the three candidates running for president this time was Michelle Obama, Democrat, Ben Carson for a Republican candidate, and the man you just told me was the candidate for the Green Party, vice president, was the president. And then if they liked the name Clinton so much, let's vote George Clinton and the Parliament Funkin' on an independent party, the Freedom, Peace, and Love Party. Now you got four parties with four black candidates. What do you think the white people would do about that? They would go friggin' nuts, right? That would be like the biggest crime ever, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. I would hesitate to make a blanket statement that way. What I would say is that people still observe some basic rules, if you will, about politics and voting. They are swayed heavily by the media, and whether the candidate is black or green, it seems to make little difference, because people are not voting on the basis of the caliber of the candidate or the quality of the candidate or the experience or so forth. The person with the most amount of money to sink into a media campaign, that's the person invariably who is winning. And we see that over and over again. We have incredibly well-qualified people who should be leaders, political leaders, but the system would not support that. It just would not support that. This is why I say that Barack Obama's candidacy is really should be a college level, an intense college level course, because so many things happened in the way that politics changed. This was a benchmark as solid as the benchmark of Trump now. Obama for different reasons and Trump for different reasons, but these were major, major turns in the political world, and they need to be studied. Because I don't think we have fully understood from a scientific point of view, from a historical point of view, the importance and significance of Obama's election, nor have we really begun to appreciate the Trump administration and the Trump election. This is extraordinary stuff, and you can't just think that you have a handle on it, because there's a lot still to be revealed about both candidates, about Obama's presidency and about Trump's presidency. This ought to be a very busy time for historians, political historians in particular. There's so much to learn from this.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for all the time that you gave me, and let somebody else talk. Thank you very much, Teresa.
And thank
and Ali,
you.
I love Ali, and Lincoln sounds a little like you, Hamilton. Reminds me, I love people's voices. When Jose calls, please call all the time, Jose, because he inspires me when he goes on his rant about the injustices of Marcus Garvey. It's just so empowering. I just love all the people that call in. My heart goes out to all of you. I just love you all. Thank you very much.
Your contribution, your wonderful contributions every time you call. Something new to learn. Thank you. David from Brooklyn, the pleasure of being the last caller today.
It's nice to talk to you today. I mean, there's so many interesting things. I don't hardly know where to start. But I'm going to start with one thing about what I feel is a very prevalent situation in the African-American community. To me, many people in the community, they don't understand the ruling class and what it has in mind. They don't understand, as I see it, that the ruling class at this point in time does not care what color the candidate that they're going to support for president is. Their idea is they're going to get somebody who's going to be a good executive officer for those who are in real charge, those that oligarchs at the top. So
Bingo.
Yes, you see
that
what I'm saying?
So true.
Yeah. So when they pick Barack Obama, and they picked him. He had to be vetted by them and financed by them. So the point I'm making is that if they were against him and they didn't see him as an asset, as their executive officer, he would never have gotten to first base whatsoever. So what I'm saying, that many African-American people do not understand that. They will tell you things. I turned blue in the face trying to explain to people what I'm talking about now. They would say things like, oh, yes, the Republicans don't like him and whatnot, and, oh, he's the best friend. I mean, no understanding of how this thing works. They don't understand anything about the Heritage Foundation or the Council on Foreign Relations or the Manhattan Institute and all those think tanks that the ruling class has to put their force behind a person they're going to suggest to be a candidate in these two parties, this duopoly, capitalist parties. And then there's another factor. In the African-American community, we have always been people who, as far as I'm concerned, were against imperialism and colonialism in Africa and whatnot. And here, at this stage, we flipped. We did a flip-flop. We started supporting Obama and killing Colonel Gaddafi and doing the things that he did to destroy that country and Syria and whatnot. And he wanted to threaten President Assad to attack him with airplanes. All this kind of stuff, and we didn't understand that we'd flip-flop. We weren't for war at that point, but a significant number of people of color, black people in particular, were supporting Gaddafi with these things. I mean, supporting Obama. So, you know, that's one thing I wanted to talk about. The other thing is, I had mentioned a few weeks ago about what people can do on the local level. I work in a lot of fronts. And I told you what I did with the sidewalks and all that, and that accomplished. What I'd like to do is for other people to take my example and do the same thing in this New York area. Go down your street, see where the broken sidewalks are, and do what you have to do. All you have to do is call the 311, and that can be done. And you don't even have to give your name. The point is, we have to do things at that level, too. Take action. Take action. Support your community. If you want trees, you get the trees. You don't own the street, so do what I did. Be creative. If you have somebody that doesn't like trees or tell you they're bad for you, and I've met people like that, you do what is creative, and you make it happen. So there's a lot of things in support of the community. You see, the point is, also, moving on to another thing, you got to make friends with some people. Many of the people, European people in the liberal community, they will give you support. And I'm not going to tell you all the tens of thousands of dollars I brought to this community, but, you know, I make allies. And, you know, it's nice. I feel good about the fact that I got a Dr. Ben honorarium and a Dr. Clark. And I remember I got Dr. Clark at this place where I got an honorarium for him, and I drove him home in my car. And also Professor Van Sertima, you see. And that came from liberal European people. Twice I got Van Sertima honorarium for talks, and I got one of my children to have him go to one of those elite private schools for another one. So there's a lot of things that we can do. So we have to work on all fronts. We don't always have to have a big group, but we have to take action on a local level and understand the nature of the system that you have and how it works, and do your best to improve your situation at home and abroad, and fight imperialism wherever you can.
Well, thank you, and well said. Thank you so much. And that brings us to the end of the program today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And you know I like that program. It speaks about expanding the mind. One great asset we all have. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday. And be talking some more. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.